Many people in Appalachia feel misunderstood by people in the rest of the country.
There's an idea that Appalachia is not fundamentally part of the United States, that it's a place within a place, and it's not a place, but a problem.
I'm Kelly McEvers, historian Elizabeth Catt on what people are missing, plus analysis of President Trump's first State of the Union, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered starts at 4 p.m. on KTOO Juno.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, Alaska Constitutional Convention delegate George Sundberg recalls his long career in and out of civil service, politics, and journalism on Alaska statehood pioneers in their own words. At 9, True North, the Sean Swerner story, is a powerful and adventure-filled saga of strength, resilience, and hope for those touched by cancer. Gavel, Alaska resumes at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Welcome to a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in today. On our show, Carl Brodesen will highlight the Juno World Affairs Council's World Quest this weekend. Patty Hutchins Jopie will preview her first Friday art show. Tom and Michelle Pauser will promo a live group fitness workout at the Fieldhouse. We'll talk with Chef Steph about her Valentine's tasty treats. And we'll get an Eagle Crest update from Jeff Rakow. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 24 degrees and mostly cloudy here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans were not mentioned in President Trump's first State of the Union address. But that's not stopping Native people and their allies in Congress from continuing to advocate for tribes. Matt Laszlo reports.
Willie Frank is with the Nisqually tribe. He was invited to attend the address by Washington State Democratic Congressman Denny Heck, which he says was a bittersweet honor.
I wish I would have been here for Obama, but, you know, somebody's got to be here and to tell the story and see what we take away from it.
Frank says he had a simple message for President Trump.
Protect the environment, protect our natural resources, protect our water, our air, our land, everything that we lived off of for thousands of years.
While Republicans are praising the address, Democrats say the president squandered an opportunity to bring unity to the nation and instead offended many immigrants and people of color. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
An employee for a car dealership in Rapid City, South Dakota, has been fired for comments he made on social media aimed at Native Americans about a fire at Bear Butte. Jim Kent has more.
A wildfire was reported at Bear Butte on Saturday morning and quickly became a topic of conversation on social media. Bear Butte is considered sacred to the Lakota, Cheyenne, Arapaho, and other tribes, but is also regularly visited by non-natives. While people were expressing their concern over the impact of the current blaze, an employee of McKee Ford Lincoln posted a comment that read, quote, "Looks like you need to take Bear Butte away from the Indians." End quote. Julie Garrell is Lakota from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. She contacted the car dealership about the comment.
"We will handle this," is what they said to me. "I have no commentary on the termination of the employee because I feel like that's their decision, but I do believe that they had to take some action to let the Native people in their community know that this isn't how we feel. They addressed it. They have a no-tolerance, no-discrimination policy, and I feel like that was appropriate."
A press release from McKee Ford Lincoln President Mark McKee noted that the employee had been terminated and that his views do not reflect those of McKee or his staff. McKee added that his employees will complete further training to prevent similar incidents in the future. I'm Jim Kent.
A class action lawsuit has been filed against the Canadian government on behalf of Native people who claim abuse at Indian hospitals beginning in 1945. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The lawsuit is on behalf of patients of 29 of the Indian hospitals. Most of the facilities were former Second World War barracks that have been described as overcrowded, unsanitary, and having poorly trained staff. They were originally used to treat native patients for tuberculosis, then eventually other illnesses. One of the lawyers leading the class action is Jonathan Patak. He says the lawsuit alleges that patients at these segregated hospitals were routinely abused, sexually and physically. Many were held in isolation. They were deprived of food and drink and forced to eat their own vomit. In addition, there were allegations that children were disciplined by being placed in body casts, and surgeries were performed without parental permission. Patak says the last of the hospitals closed in 1981, and victims have suffered in silence for decades.
It's more about shining a light on this really dark chapter in Canadian history so that Canadians are aware of this. We've now had greater awareness of other Indigenous issues relating to residential schools and so forth, and people would be shocked to learn that this happened in the modern era. Quite recently.
The Federal Minister of Indigenous Relations and Northern Affairs says while Ottawa respects the decision by the plaintiffs to go to court, the government believes the best way to address the issue is through negotiation and dialogue. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Heard Museum, hosting the 28th annual Hoop Dance World Championship, where you can see more than 70 talented Native hoop dancers vie for the championship title February 10th and 11th. Details at heard.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. Joining me in the studio is Carl Broderson. He is a board member with the Juno World Affairs Council, and he's quiz master at this Friday night's World Quest at Centennial Hall. Quizmaster Carl, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right. World Quest, 19th annual?
Yeah, 19th annual. How about that?
All right. And this, of course, supports the World Affairs Council. I'm pretty familiar with what you guys do. It's often here at 360,
yes,
downstairs in the KTOO building. As you say, bringing the world to Juneau. Give us a few examples of some of the stuff you guys have been doing this year.
Yeah, well, we bring speakers, experts in their fields to come to Juneau who probably wouldn't otherwise have an excuse to come up and visit us, and something is a little more personal when it is somebody in the room telling you about their own experiences and knowledge as opposed to, say, just reading about it online. So we have a wide variety of speakers. We've had just recently the executive director of Plowshares came in, Philip Yoon. We had a Pakistani midwife who was a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. And we've also had, a college student from Sitka. I mean, it's a wide variety of people, but who know what they're talking about and have interesting viewpoints and perspectives on the world.
Not to put you on the spot or anything, but did any of them touch you personally? I know sometimes you go to a lecture or a speech and you just walk out with shivers because you can tell it's a turning point in your life. Anything like that for you in the last couple of years?
In the last couple of years, yes, absolutely. And I'm trying to think why, though. In terms of shivers down my spine, probably one of the most recent ones we had, Philip Yoon talking about North Korea. And his concern was more recklessness than anything else. And that really brought home to me how little control we have over situations like that sometimes, and that mistakes get made. I mean, he gave his presentation shortly after the false alarm in Hawaii. And, it's relatively similar situation could create an even bigger problem. But then from more personal notes, I've made very good friends with people who have come up and presented over the years. And I always try to show them around town and then leave them with an existential crisis about whether or not they should drop everything and move to Juneau because they like it so much.
That's great. So World Quest this Friday night, and I guess we should go back for a minute. All of these events, usually around 5, 5:30, are
yeah.
free.
Yes, absolutely, right? Free. WorldQuest, our fundraiser, is the only thing we charge for, but given that it is a fundraiser, that seems fair.
And
but,
that supports bringing these speakers up to Juno and sharing their viewpoints with us.
It's expensive, but it's worth doing just to get these people here and talk to us in person.
All right. So 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall this Friday. What can people expect?
It is very reminiscent of your standard Centennial Hall fundraiser. You show up and there's a great big ballroom and it's warm and bright. There's that beautiful new gray floor. There's a silent auction. There's desserts auction as well. There's the bar in the corner. No host, but still it's a good way to have a good time. And the one thing that sets us apart, though, is the trivia contest, and that there is a particular point of focus for the evening once dinner has started. And the entire room plays together with your table as your team, and we just run through a great, big, fun PowerPoint of trivia questions.
And you're the quiz master. Is there a theme this year or ever?
There used to be themes, and then I found them entirely too constructive. And so the first year when there was no theme, the themes were random, various, and assorted. And everyone appreciated it.
So like, we'll take assorted for 100,
well, let's
Carl.
I don't even bring questions with me anymore because they really are so random and eclectic that you can't create a proper impression with less than, you know, 10 or 20 of them. But I will say that it's not, you know, random, boring pop culture things. Like, I don't necessarily care which Kardashian is dating which other Kardashian. No, that'd be wrong. I don't care who's dating who. Sorry, apologies. But, you know, if I can find something else that's related to that, you know, like a question about the recent royal wedding and then tie that back to something more historically significant, we'll do that. But it's just everything.
And people can play individually or as tables? How does that work?
As tables, yeah. So, I mean, you show up, you sit down for dinner, and then the game starts. So groups of eight or more or less. But from a social standpoint, all you have to do is show up. You know, it will find a table, find a spot for you, and it's extremely low-key. You don't need to feel like you're on the spot or just on your own.
Are they hitting buzzers at their table or writing their answers down?
Writing them down. I would love to have buzzer technology, but at this point, paper is what we've got. And, so you fill in an answer sheet of 10, hand that in, go off, mingle for a few minutes, then come back and go on to the next round. And
sounds like a fun way to socialize, maybe make some new friends at the table.
It really is, yeah. And it doesn't matter in the slightest, and yet it does, too. It's one of those things that covers both characteristics very well. And so you can have an awfully good time with it. And if you're winning, great. And if you're not, who cares?
Who's making dinner for y'all?
It's the Hangar on the Wharf. They do a good job for us every year, and we're grateful for them.
Okay, so 6 p.m., that's when doors open. Mm-hmm. When does the game start?
The game usually starts at 7. It says specifically in in our schedule-ish, because it can take a while to get things going. But 6 is a pretty good time to arrive. I mean, you take your coat off, get your spot, sort of get in line a few minutes after that for food, and get going by 7.
And if it's a fundraiser in Juneau and Centennial Hall, you must have a silent auction?
Oh, yes. I'm part of that subcommittee as well, and I think we've done a good job of finding a nice array of items. And I have to say props to Juno's business community, because these folks get hit up by folks like us constantly, and they always come out for it, and I really appreciate that.
All right, so you're playing the game at 7. People maybe starting to walk out, what, 8:39, something like that?
A little bit later than that.
Yeah.
It's 50 questions, so we're usually done around 10.
Okay.
Which feels awfully late, but it's not that late, is it really? I mean, it's a good solid movie and a dinner kind of experience. I think on a per-hour basis it works out pretty well. And I would say that this being Juno, I would aim more towards 6:15 than the 7 o'clock side of things, because the game starts at 7. We have to be ready to go by then.
And what time is dinner served?
Dinner usually around 6:30, but the Hangar is extremely prompt, so sometimes it's even earlier than that.
Okay. If people want more information, tickets, that kind of stuff, where can they go?
JWAC.org, or you can just Google Juno World Affairs Council. It's all there.
And besides this Friday night at 6 p.m., what's next on your calendar? Do you have your next speaker scheduled? Or
The next item is actually our forum, which is a multi-day event out at UAS. That's March 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And that is also as information on our website.
Great. And I'm sure you'll be back to tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Carl Broderson, Quizmaster, board member at the Juno World Affairs Council. Meet him this Friday at 6 p.m. at the Centennial Hall. Carl, thank you. Anything else you want to add?
This is a fantastic event. If you've ever thought about trying it, go for it. It is fun.
Take my stand upon the Blue Ridge Mountain. Here I'll take my stand, a rifle on my shoulder, six shooter in my hand. Lord, Lord, I've been all around this world.
come and open the door. Lulu, my Lulu, come and open the door before I have to walk on in with my old 44. Oh, Lord, I've been all around this world.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 31st, about 16 minutes past the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Patty Hutchins-Jopie. She has a show, an art show, going up this first Friday at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Welcome to the show, Patty.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, nice to have you here. You gave me this beautiful display of your art, ocean-inspired watercolors from China.
Sounds
Chinese
like watercolors.
Chinese watercolors and lights involved. Please do a better job of describing this to our listeners than I am.
It's a very unique show, and it came about a year ago in thought for the Juno Douglas City Museum 12x12 show, and the theme that year was ink. So I did these Chinese watercolor in ink 12x12s of cephalopods, which are under the sea ink producers. So I did that, and quite by luck, I did four of them and made a cube out of it and stuck a light in it to see what it would look like with the lights out in the room and illuminated from behind. And lo and behold, it changed the color of the painting to be very reminiscent of what you experience when you're in the ocean. You know, the light is filtered down and it's dimmed down, especially in the evening time when you're in the ocean. So all the bells and whistles went off, and I thought, oh, this would make a great bigger show with bigger pieces. So I approached the Jack, and they accepted my proposal. And lo and behold, we have a show Friday of some big pieces. I think that's not all of them. I think there's 24.
Okay, so 24 pieces of various size.
Yeah, 60 by 30 is the largest.
And what's the smallest?
12 by 12.
Take one of those, maybe one you enjoyed making the most, and take us through the process.
Probably the big turtle. The process is you get the canvas, you treat the canvas with an absorbent ground, because normal canvas won't absorb watercolor paint. So you have to treat it first. Then I use Chinese watercolors because they're very staining, they're very transparent. So you can pour them around on canvas and get some brilliant colors and mixing. And regular watercolors don't do that. So then you take these huge canvases, and the first one I did was huge, that one, and actually hung it on the outside of the house and poured the paint down the front of it. This turtle one I mentioned, and my favorite, was a matter of you take the canvas, you mask out, like I knew I wanted to have turtles in it, so you have to use a masking fluid to mask out the body. Then you start mixing the paint and pouring it onto the canvas, and then literally picking one part of the canvas up to get it to flow. And then at the same time, I get down, I do this all on the floor, usually to move the paint around so it looks more like you're underwater and you have the motion of the water. I either blow it around with a hairdryer or I get down with a straw. And the 60 inches, by the time I got done blowing with a straw from one end to the other of different paint layers, I had to go take a nap because I was winded. So it's that process. Then you go back, take the masking fluid off, and put in your subject. Again, very loosely, just apply water, apply color, and let it happen.
That's some work. And so, okay, that's the giant turtle you're talking about.
Yeah, the process is the same for every one.
And what's the overall size of this one, that turtle?
It's 60 by
30. It is.
60 by 30,
it's
yeah.
It's 60 by 30.
With the internal frame.
Okay. And so you have the internal frame, this process you just spoke of. And where does the light come in?
Okay, the light, which came from that accident, you know, happy accidents happen in art. And the light comes, I got a hold of some LED strip lighting, small little lighting, and tack them on the back of the frame. And the light illuminates down from the top. So if you go over to the gallery at the Jack, it's all set up now, so we're actually going to have the show with all the lights off in the Jack and just use the illumination, a little bit of side illumination on the art itself.
Sounds like you're having a lot of fun doing this.
It is. It's been a lot of fun. You know, normally in the past, if people have seen my work, it's rather detailed and oil, and I've just had a lot of fun doing this. I mean, you feel like a little kid just rolling color and paint and letting it do its own thing. So it's been a lot of fun.
And you use the ocean a lot as your setting, mm-hmm. and a lot of ocean animals. What inspires those? What draws you to those?
Oh, I just like I like the ocean. I like being on it, in it, under it.
You dive, right?
I do, not so much anymore. More snorkeling now, but we fish a lot here, so we see whales all the time and sea lions all the time. And my second home is Hawaii because I used to teach there too for the state of Alaska, of course. But it, you know, it's a little bit of creatures from here and creatures from there.
Okay, and you work full time as an artist as well, right?
I do. It's something I've wanted to do for decades, but I had, you know, some people don't pursue that early in life, and I tell everybody I have to make up for lost time. Now I'm really trying to experience as many different medium as I can and go out there and really pursue it.
Yeah, and you said you also work in oil?
Yes, I do oils. I had a show last summer that stemmed from my residency at Greening, so it was all, it was called Intertidal, so it was all coastal scenes from out the road, as we call it. And then I'm already working on my next project. I started to learn how to paint the human face and the human form, which is very difficult to do. So I want to incorporate people into my landscapes now.
Okay. In the meantime, we can see this body of work starting this Friday, right?
It starts Friday. Doors open at 4:30, and it runs through February.
And this is at the Juno Arts and Community Center, right?
Yeah, Culture Center, yeah.
Culture Center.
The building right across the road.
Only said it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, and it'll be up for the month, right?
It'll be up through the month, and there's a lot going on. So if you go to Wearable Arts, pop over to the Jack and see my show.
If somebody can't make it, is there a place where they can find your art online or other
ways? jopy-art.blogspot.com, or you can get a hold of me through the Jack. I always have work there, so you can always get a hold of me there. Or I actually have a gallery studio at my house, which is on the way out to the glacier, on Glacier Spur, the last group of houses, you know, as you get to the Tongass Forest. And so I'm right there. People can always call or email me and make an appointment to come in. I've got an overabundance of paintings, so I'd like to share that.
All right. That's the voice of Patty Hutchins Jopy. She'll be showing her show Unfathomable, putting up her show Unfathomable this first Friday at the Jack Juno Arts and Community Center, starting at 4:30. Meet her there as part of First Friday events. Patty, thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Oh, no, it's just a bright, colorful, happy show, so come in, get out of the winter wind and come in.
Drink champagne out under the stars while others drink wine, lean over a bar. All that I need, dear, to make me feel fine is to know that your love will ever be mine. I give an ocean of diamonds, a world filled with
this is Ray Troll from Ketchikan's Ratfish Wranglers. We're thrilled to play our fishy style of rock and roll in Juneau for the America's Salmon Forest Celebration on Friday, February 2nd at the Jack. On Thursday evening, we'll record a special one-hour TV concert at 360. We hope you can join us for both. Cameras roll on Thursday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at 360 in the KTOO building. Admission is fish. Free.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 31st. We're at the bottom of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. And joining me in the studio now are Tom and Michelle Pauser. They are trainers out at Pavitt, and they're going to tell us about what they do and also about this person, Joel Freeman, who they are bringing to town for a sort of group fitness workout at the Field House. Welcome to the show, Tom and Michelle.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Nice to have you both here. So tell us about you two. What do you do?
We are the motivators. We are just trying to make Southeast Alaska healthy and active and happy, really. We're group fitness instructors at PAVIT, like you said, and we're also independent team beach body coaches. So what we bring to the PAVIT studio in person, we also bring to people online all over the U.S., Canada, and U.K. So we feel that what we do online makes us better instructors because we become invested in the people that we care for and the people that we guide through the nutrition and the fitness. And we our total goal is their success. And we follow through and we just cheer them on every step of the way.
What are some examples of how you motivate people?
We are cheerleaders. You know, any little step of success that somebody may have, we keep them going. We highlight every single piece of success. If somebody's down, we will regroup. We will bring them back to the table. We will talk about, okay, their goals, their fitness, nutrition, everything. We're both nationally certified, sports nutrition, ACE and AFA certified. So we kind of take it one step beyond just your, here's a workout, here's a nutrition plan, follow it.
Not weight loss.
Yep. We will guide people. It's not a quick fix. It's every single day, one step process.
And what are a few of the programs that you encourage?
Actually, we encourage all kinds of activity. If you want to be an athlete, you need to do more than just running or just yoga or just weightlifting. You should have to build an ultimate athlete, you should be doing strength training and you should be doing flexibility and you should have cardiovascular endurance. I mean, you want to be able to do all kinds of things to enhance your normal everyday life because it does. You can do laundry easier, take the garbage out easier, do gardening easier when you treat your body with respect and you push yourself to grow.
Okay. So what if we have listeners that aren't striving to be a world-class athlete but just want to live a healthy lifestyle? What are a few pieces of advice you may have for them?
Nutrition. Nutrition is the golden key. You can work out all day long and have really poor nutrition, and your body's just not going to be as receptive as it should be. Healthy eating, staying active, and you know, having a support system. You know, and that's what we are. We're the support. We're the cheerleaders. You know, get in touch with us. We'll keep you going.
Not to put you on the spot. What's your go-to meal, though? Speaking of nutrition, what's one of your favorite things to eat?
Besides tacos?
Favorite?
Really? So you can eat tacos?
In moderation.
Oh, I'll eat a whole Reese's peanut butter cup if I want, but
okay.
No.
Responsibility.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. You know, well, Tom always goes to the side of salad and a protein.
Every day.
I need more variety, so I can't really pinpoint one thing, really, but you do need, your body does need, whether you are an athlete or not, your body does need carbohydrates, proteins, and healthy fats. And it should be in the right amount for your body, your age, your gender, you know. So, I mean, each person is an individual, and we also work with people to help to make sure that they're getting what they need. So, like, there isn't just one thing that is, you know, especially for me, but like I said, Tom's salad and a protein. Yeah.
All right. And so I'm sure people can get in touch with you two at PAVIT anytime.
Anytime.
Pretty much, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And
on Facebook.
Across from Brotherhood Bridge, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now you're bringing this person, Joel Freeman, and you're saying he's the guy.
He is a world famous trainer, and he's a Beachbody super trainer. As individual independent coaches that we are, we have the opportunity to invite these super trainers, whether it's Sean T, Tony Horton, Shalene Johnson, Sigi Kalev. There's a new super trainer, Chris Downing, and Joel Freeman, who is the co-creator of Core to Force, which is a core MMA-inspired total body workout. And it's morphed over from a home program to a live group fitness format. And as the creator, we got in touch with him actually when we were in New Orleans at one of our big Beachbody conferences. And we mentioned, hey, you know, we live in Alaska. I've never been to Alaska.
Boom.
Boom. That all kind of set the wheels in motion.
The Joel Freeman, in like popular culture terms, who is he? Like if he was an actor,
Like, he's, who would you say he is?
In the fitness culture, as an actor?
Oh.
Like, is he Tom Hanks?
Well, not quite as old school as Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks has been around a little.
Leo DiCaprio.
A little older. Even younger than Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, he's a young pup. Yeah, Joel is a young pup.
And he's coming to Juno.
He is. His goal, he's kind of like us. We make working out fun.
Yes.
You know, if you're just going to sit there and just get bored out of your mind doing, believe it or not, burpees are one of our favorite things. Not a lot of people like burpees, but if you can be an entertainer, if you can bring the fun atmosphere to fitness and nutrition, and this guy's education will bring that.
And his personality.
He's just amazing.
Remind us what a burpee is.
How about we demonstrate for you and you can follow? No.
10 burpees. Let's do it.
Let's do 10 burpees.
and we got a hold of Beachbody pretty much right away. I went over to London for one of our UK launches and met up with a trainer that everybody knows, Shanti, and he talked about, you know, Alaska. And at the same time, we had the wheels in motion for Joel Freeman to come up here. And Beachbody right away approved it.
Yes.
And bam, he was on his way. So we've been in contact with him. He's excited. He wants to just come and bring fitness and nutrition and talk about living a healthier, more fulfilling lifestyle and how Michelle and I can bring it to everybody, all fitness levels, all lifestyles.
All ages.
It's about building a foundation. It's not what you did 20 years ago back in high school. We're in our mid to upper 40s, so it's anybody can change. This is 6 years in the motion for us, so anybody can do it. And we have those incremental steps that you can just bring to the table, build a new foundation, and start living that healthier lifestyle. Add decades to your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's see. It's on February 4th. Give us the details.
Oh, boy, goodness. Doors open at 10:45, and there will be a meet and greet, Q&A. You can talk to me and Tom and Joel. Joel will be there. He's really excited to bring this to Juno because, you know, like all across the nation, you know, there's an obesity problem. There are substance abuse issues. But here in Southeast Alaska, you know, the isolation compounds that. And less daylight in the winter. You know, some people are really affected by that. Sad. And, you know, so we are, Tom and I are very passionate about, you know, making sure that people can see options. They have ways that they can help combat these things and help make their lives better. And Joel is going to be addressing these things. And he's also going to be an hour-long workout led by him of Core to Force, the program that he created. And he's going to make sure that he is available for every single person who wants a photograph to be taken with him. He says he's not letting anybody behind in the pictures.
So February 4th, that's Sunday?
Yes.
Sunday.
From, you said, doors open at 10:45 at the Fieldhouse.
Yes.
If somebody's never been to the Fieldhouse, how would you describe how to get there?
Thunder Mountain High School, if you're turning in towards Thunder Mountain, you see in the back left corner, instead of turning to the front parking lot of Thunder Mountain High School, you'll see it tucked back in the corner. And we'll have many of our team members. Team Arctic Fitness is our team, and we have an amazing fit family. A lot of our local fit famers, we call them, will be coming to the event, and all of their friends and family, and invite everybody.
Everybody is welcome. They don't have to be a part of our fit family. Everybody in Juno is welcome. It's $40 per person. And what we want to make sure, and what Joel wants to make sure, is that everybody that pays that $40 walks out of there at 2 p.m. thinking, I can't believe I got all of that for just $40.
And.
Oh, that's right.
And. Yes. Everybody has a ticket. We don't have the ticket, but you're getting actual real tickets that I designed.
Yes.
They all have numbers, and we're going to be doing a drawing at the end. And we have massage at Chez Santé. We have a home program, P90X, and also Pavit is donating a 3-month, 6-month, or 12-month free membership to Pavit Health and Fitness. And we'll have other little trinkets and stuff as prizes towards the end.
Yeah.
And we just want to get as many people. We're capping it at 250 people.
Yeah, no more. No more than 200.
People.
We want it small-ish, as small as possible, because we want people to feel like they got their money's worth, and then some.
If people want more information, how can they contact you?
Facebook is probably the best way. Find Tom or Michelle Pauser. P-A-U-S-E-R is how you spell our last name. Or Pavit. Pavit is also selling tickets to the event there. But Tom and I are selling them individually as well.
Okay. Yeah. That's the voice of Michelle Pouncer. You can also meet her and Tom at the Joel Freeman event on February 4th, 2018, this Sunday at the Fieldhouse. Doors open at 10:45. Thank you so much, Tom and Michelle. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Oh, oh, we look forward to seeing you there, too.
Yeah. All right. Wait. Thank you.
Thanks, you
Thank you.
We'll do some burpees.
How did that go?
Gonna feel like hell tonight. The tears of rage I cannot buy. I'd be the last to help you understand. Are you strong enough to be my man? My
Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace is over, but you may qualify for a special enrollment if your circumstances have changed, like losing your health insurance, moving to Alaska, being denied or losing Medicaid coverage, or other life changes. Special enrollments last for only 60 days from a qualifying life event, so don't delay. Call Search Outreach for free assistance at 966-8662. We serve everyone.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, January 31st. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 18 minutes till the top of the hour. Chef Steph has joined me in the studio, and we're going to be talking about First Friday, the Juno Artists Gallery, and Valentine's Day. Welcome to the show, Chef Steph.
Well, thank you, Scott. Nice to see you. Nice to be here.
If nobody's ever met you, Chef Steph, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, I make yummy, yummy treats. I make shortbread and salted caramels and salted black licorice, and almond toffee. I use Juno ingredients. I use spruce tips for my salted caramels. I use the juniper gin from Amalga Distillery. I use their aromatics also for salted caramels. So,
All right.
a little taste of Juno.
Okay. And you are a member of the Juno Artist Gallery Co-op, is that right?
Yes.
Cool. If somebody has never been to that co-op, how would you explain how to get there?
It's on Franklin Street. About two storefronts down from the Alaska Hotel, across from the Imagination Station.
And about how many artists like you are there?
We're about 22.
Okay.
And we have a couple of new members that we're super excited to show off and showcase, and a new renovation. We were closed for the past couple of weeks, and place looks good. So I always tell people, if you haven't been, come, because artists change, our spots move, new artwork comes, new goodies appear on the shelves. So if you think you've seen it, come back, and it's changed. And with the remodel, spaces have moved a little bit, and it just has such a nice look and feel to it.
When does cooking and creating baked goods become artful for you?
You know, I started out in this life as an art director, and then I switched to cooking, and it was the in-between was baking cakes and just decorating them. And it's so much fun. I love it. And it's the melding of the two worlds, and it's creating and it's feeding people. And it's so much fun, and it never gets boring. And when it does, there's a new cookie.
Like this one right here that you gave me. Describe what I'm about to eat to the listeners, please.
What you have is called Hearts of Fire. It is a chocolate heart-shaped cookie, and the cookie has cinnamon, cayenne, and black pepper in it. Then it has crushed cinnamon candies on top. So there's a bit of heat to them, and it's beautiful. It's this red jeweled or red bejeweled sparkly cookie.
Nice description. Next to that, I see some shortbread hearts.
Yes. So I have my vanilla shortbread with some pink, red, and white sprinkles on it, very Valentine's-y. So, I know Valentine's Day is all about chocolate, and sometimes a nice shortbread cookie is just the thing. So it's lovely and it's fun, and they're small, so you can share them.
Okay.
Or eat them all yourself.
And your company is also called Chef Steffs, is that right?
Chef Steffs, yes.
And is the primary outlet for that at the gallery?
Yes. I have an online business, but it's mostly at the gallery.
Okay.
I'm a few other places, but you will find everything at the gallery.
So if people are interested in Valentine's Tasty Treats from Chef Steff, they can go to the gallery this first Friday. Is that a good time to go?
First Friday is perfect. Everything will be out. And I will have, we're always known for our snacks at First Friday. And I will have the Hearts of Fire cookies as part of the First Friday snack, so people could come and try them. And
about what time does it get going over there?
4:30 till 7.
Okay.
And, it's going to be a little, I keep watching the weather, and it's going to be a little blustery, a little cold, so a hot cookie would be perfect to warm you up.
Sounds great. It's great to have you on the show, as always, Chef Steff. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Nope, that's it. And if there's anything you need outside of the cookies, if ever you come to the gallery and there's something not there, just pick up one of my cards and give me a call, and I'll make it and get it to you as soon as I can.
And what's your website?
ChefSteffs.com.
All right, Chef Steff, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Hanging around downtown by myself, and I had so much time to sit down and think about myself. And then there she was, like double cherry pie. Yeah, there she was, like disco superfly. I smell sex and candy hair. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah. Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Dig it. And
In platform double suede, yeah, there she was. Like disco lemonade. Yeah. I smell sex and candlelit here. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah. I smell sex and lounging in my chair. Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Dear. Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, yeah, mama, this must be my dream.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD with Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon, about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Joining us in the studio now is Jeffra Clow, down from the mountain at Eagle Crest. Welcome to the show, Jeffra.
Thanks for having me on this afternoon, Scott.
All right. So you guys are open weekends right now, is that right?
We are. We're operating the Porcupine Chair weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and then next weekend, or 2 weekends from now, President's Day, we'll be open on Monday the 19th, but we're still hoping for more snow. We're all doing our snow dances. I know you are as well, but we are making the most of the snow we have at the mountain.
Yeah, so. And Porcupine is running, right?
Porcupine is running. It's operating from 9 to 3:30 now, and we'll start chasing daylight. So in another week, we'll go to 9 to 4. But this weekend, coming weekend, it will be open 9 to 3:30. And we've had a lot of people up there, Scott, learning how to ski and snowboard and skiing, playing. We've got terrain features on Stickleback. And, you know, so, yeah, it's not the terrain we all want, but hey, and you know, sometimes you just have to make the most of what you got.
Maybe it's time for skiers to learn how to snowboard, or
exactly.
Snowboarders to learn how to ski, or
challenge yourself.
If you're a snowboarder, you can practice the opposite direction.
Yep,
all
go
these
switch
kind of things,
and,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So you know, it's sliding on the snow, and everybody's having a good time. And we've got some things going on this weekend that on Sunday that we thought we'd let people know. So we have a great partnership with the Sea Dogs. And so this is the third year. The Sea Dogs will be up on Sunday from 10 to 1. They're going to be at the top of Muskeg. And so you can come up and meet the Sea Dogs. So we've got Tango and Panzer, Otis, Sage, Brew, and more.
If people don't know what the Sea Dogs are, can you explain them?
Yep, they are the search and rescue dogs. And they also do some avalanche. They have some Avy dogs in their crew as well. And they do a lot of training up at Eagle Crest. They'll be up early morning hours riding the chair, getting the dogs used to being on the chair, getting the dogs used to running in the snow behind the skiers, and then also digging and training to dig things out of the snow, which is what they're trained to do.
And this is an opportunity for the public to meet these dogs and their trainers?
It is. Yep, yep. So they're going to be up the top of Muskeg. You will need a lift ticket, but we do this every year for our program kids through the Snow Sports School, but it's also a great opportunity for all of our guests to just come up and interact with the dogs, and they're going to build some piles of snow and do a little bit of demonstration. And the dogs are just great. They just love to interact with the kids and everybody. So it's a great opportunity to see what they do.
All right. So that's this Sunday. And what time?
From 10 until 1 at the top of Muskeg.
And that's Muskeg is the run that Porcupine takes you to the top
Correct.
Of. Is that right?
Yep. Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. So we're running three. We have three groomed runs off of Porcupine. So there's Muskeg, Dolly Varden, and Stickleback. And they're all in great shape. And we're seeing a lot of people coming up, adults and kids, learning how to ski and snowboard. And, you know, if you have a season pass, Sunday, February 4th is also season pass Bring a Friend Day. So go ahead and bring a friend up for free, and they can come up, ski around the Porcupine Chair, meet the Sea Dogs, and just have a great time on the snow.
And there's a restaurant as well, right?
There is a restaurant, the Eagle Crest Grill, and also Mountain Lift Coffee. So you can come up and spend the day with us, spend a couple hours with us. But it's a great time to get outside and kind of see what's going on. And if you don't ski, come up and watch the activity and think about learning how to ski.
All right, and then looking to the next weekend?
Yep, next weekend we have, we've decided we're going to celebrate what snow we have, and we're going to also celebrate the start of the Winter Olympics. So on Friday, February 9th, we're doing Porcupine Under the Lights. So this will be from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday evening, and it's a regular price lift tickets, $15 for adults and seniors, and $10 for teen and youth, and child are free if you buy a lift ticket. Or, of course, season passes are also good. And you can find all the details at skijuno.com. But we're going to just really celebrate it. We've got an all-you-can-eat spaghetti feast happening. And it's just going to be a great time on the mountain under the lights.
Okay. Jeff McCloud, thanks for coming down and filling us in on all things Eagle Crest. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I think you can find everything Eagle Crest at skijuno.com. And you can also find us on your favorite social media platform.
All right, Jeffra, thank you so much. We'll be doing the snow dance.
Perfect. Thanks, Scott.
Chilly day, midwinter, you notice a large nest made of sticks high in a leafless cottonwood. Atop the nest sits a large, dark shape, its broad head sporting two ear-like tufts, suggesting a cat's ears. A female great-horned owl is incubating two eggs. A light snow falls on her back as her mate roosts unseen in a nearby conifer. Since December, this pair has been hooting back and forth regularly at night. Why risk the year's most severe weather by nesting now? Probably because great-horned owlets, which hatch after a month of incubation, must remain near their parents a long time compared to many other birds, right through summer and into early fall. During this time, young owls learn the skills they need to hunt on their own before the rigors of the next winter set in. This adaptive strategy has proven very successful. Great-horned owls are the supreme predatory night birds from the northernmost forests of Canada to Tierra del Fuego. We have a photo of that owl covered in snow on our Facebook page. Have a look. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Looking at the weather here, the forecast for tonight calls for lows around 15 in downtown and Douglas, with northeast winds to 25 miles per hour and gusts to around 40 miles per hour. Out in the valley, it's going to be around 5 degrees for the low. Looking towards tomorrow, Thursday, mostly cloudy, highs around 20. Northeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Thanks for tuning in to A Juno Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K27.